Hello and welcome to another edition of the internet's most professional podcast. It is the Three Donkeys, presented by establishandrun.com. My name is Adam Levitin, as always joined by Jonathan Bales and Peter Jennings. I thought Bales was patched up for tonight's show, looking like a poker player wearing a bunch of patches for money, but no, that is the new Miami style. Bales, how's it going?
This is actually just a plain pink t-shirt. Tonight, I'm being sponsored by Puma.
Sponsored by Puma. Peter, as always, sponsored by Nike. How's it going?
Yeah, I got the Nikes in the background. And yeah, Bales has got the Miami Vice thing going. And Puma, what is that? It's like a cougar almost, right? Is that a big brand in Miami? Cougars are around?
I'm not sure. There are some panthers in Florida, I believe. A few wild panthers. That's different from a puma. I believe a puma and a cougar and a mountain lion are all the same thing.
But it's different. We have mountain lions here in Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah. Then I think you have pumas, but I might be wrong.
Florida Panthers, of course, the hockey team. I'm sure they named him that for a reason. And also Cougars, shout out Zach Wilson. The MILF Hunter narrative is in play this year. I'm not sure if you guys realize. Quick take. If you were a fan of the Jets, would you like Zach Wilson more because he allegedly banged his mom's friend? Or do you think it's a sign of bad judgment and therefore you like him less as your quarterback because he banged his mom's friend?
Imagine saying you like him less. I mean, the swag factor is just off the charts. I mean,
it could be bad. It could be bad judgment. You know, banging your mom's friend.
Dare I say it doesn't matter for fantasy. but I respect him more as a person.
All right,
I respect him more.
Oh boy! All right. So I was in actually New Jersey this past weekend for my good friend's 40th birthday. And like one thing I was thinking about when I was booking it, you know, like obviously don't have a lot of time this time of year. So I flew in late Friday night. Me and Lauren actually both flew in late Friday night and left Sunday, you know, 4-hour flight, all the nonsense with getting to the airport and everything. And I know people travel all the time, but like part of me was like, man, this is a lot of aggravation to go through to do this. But I don't know, the last, I'd say 10 years or so, like, my thing has been, if it's something that I think deathbed theorem, like on my deathbed, will I be happy that I went to my friend's 40th birthday? Like I'm willing to go through like almost any aggravation to do so. So yeah, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, but like, it's just sometimes things are annoying, you know, getting logistics with the kids or flying, you know, a ton in a 48-hour stretch to only be there for 36 hours. But I just thought it was worth it. And so that's something I've tried to do with life also. It's just like, hey, no matter how aggravating it is, if it's going to be something I actually think is a cool experience, I'm gonna actually do it. So yeah.
Well, where in New Jersey?
It was in Margate, so we had to fly to Philly, get a car, drive an hour and 20 minutes down to Margate. Yeah, it was a whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, like, how many more times are you going to see your buddy who just turned 40?
Right.
I mean, that's crazy about your parents, like everyone.
Exactly. Is that like, if you thought about it, like mathematically, like how many more events will there be where like everybody I know from college is going to be together, like, you know, second marriages and funerals, like maybe that's it, you know, like I can't imagine a lot of scenarios where we all get together for sure. And so everybody I knew was there from college too. So yeah, I'm glad I went for sure. It was obviously a ton of aggravation, but I'm obviously glad I went.
Yeah. I think if you think about like what makes you happy in life, for most people, it's like reminiscing on good memories or good experiences they had in the past, or looking forward to things that they have coming up. And like most of like, you know, what makes me happy is thinking about like really cool things that happened in the past. And there's only so many opportunities to create those experiences. And so, yeah, I think that it's just, I always put a lot of time into those things. Like I definitely would do what you did. And that's a no-brainer to me. There's like no price that you can really put on that.
Right. I'm surprised you said that. It's not very like Buddhist of you. Isn't the whole like Zen Buddhist thing to be like in the moment, right? We're not looking back and we're not looking about the future. We're just like trying to live in this exact moment right here.
Who said I was a Buddhist?
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but you have to plan for things, right? And
right.
To,
yeah. It's like impossible to do. I try to do it because, like, I get, you know, people who know me, I get and listen to, like, I get, you know, tilted on day to day stuff with the kids and stuff. But like, I'm trying to be better about just like, hey, I don't. What I'm doing is I'm giving 100% of my attention to right now instead of thinking about the past or the future. But I hear you.
I think the Buddhist thing would be like, you know, you make the judgment to go do that, and then there's all these inconveniences along the way, and you know, there's all these things that are outside of your control, and those things like naturally irritate me, like you know, the person taking my ticket like is just like a complete asshole, and or there's a problem that they want to check, you know, look at my baggage or whatever. And these are things you can't control. And just like being aware of that and not letting that really affect you and sort of shifting your mindset when those things happen, I think would be like the Buddhist thing, not to like not do anything ever.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, I've been traveling a bunch lately and just going around, and it is fun. It is a pain. Like, you know, the night before when you're packing, you're like, why am I doing this? But then whenever you're there, it's great. And I do, the airport tilt is it's up there. It's like the number one tilting thing. I mean, just watching the people that are sheep and just people are so selfish and stupid. It's just like, it's infuriating to me, yeah. But the opposite of Buddhism and the opposite of being a good person, but does give me motivation every day. I mean, we just got to get rich and get a private jet. And right. then we're talking. Then it's just like easy. Then you can just go around, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
No hassle.
The biggest difference between being fake rich and actually rich is having a private jet. So you don't have to deal with
that. You don't even need your own private jet. You're just being able to fly private, which is insanely expensive.
It's outrageous. I mean, yeah.
It's so expensive. You have to have like legitimate fuck you money to pull it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get there doing shows like this. This is our ticket to the private plane is not the Three Donkeys podcast.
Hey, well, I don't know. We're gonna have that figured out. You know,
that's... if Taylor has his way, he cuts Lawton, and then we get some good ad deals in here. I don't know.
Yes, $200 at a time to the.
We'll be able to. Jet. We'll pay for the $20,000 private jet ticket.
Oh boy. Anyways, any life updates from you guys you want to talk about from the last week? We are preparing for preseason NFL, which I'll get to in a second here, but any what was happening the last week you want to mention?
On my end, a lot of degeneracy, more golf. Ashley's pissed at me. Seems like standard stuff. I do think that the business world's changing a little bit, but we don't have to talk too much about that.
You mentioned Ashley's pissed at you. Like, do you think this is a bit that she's doing, or do you think she's actually pissed?
It depends on the day. I do enough nice things, it's fine. But yeah, I mean, she says I'm gallivanting and she's putting in the hard hours, but I'm grinding. I'm working too. So it's
I know you are. I know you are. But how much of that, like, how much like is she saying those things in private?
No,
it's a bit. Yeah, well, when she does have a problem, can you alleviate it quickly by knowing like exactly what to do? Do you need to like get her a gift or like show her, like do something for her? Yeah,
he's got the love languages all down. They were showing me the love language book.
Yeah. Peter showed it to me.
Thing, and Ashley doesn't listen to this podcast, thank God. But she can be bribed. That's really the, you know, at the end of the day, she can be bribed. And that's really, I think that's going to go away in about 5 to 10 years, and then I'm going to be in big trouble. Because once the bribery goes away, it's going to be tough for me. But the bribes I can handle. That's somewhere I've you know, done decent enough that I can bribe Ashley. And she has pretty expensive taste, but not like super expensive taste. So.
What about you Levy, with Lauren?
Yeah, I don't think the bribing would work so much, but I mean, you know, I actually like being home. Like, I have a way easier time than Peter saying no. I think like Peter, you know, people are asking Peter. I feel like it's not, I have no idea, but I feel like it's not always your fault that you play golf like 6 days a week. Like, people ask you,
I don't play 6 days a week, but yeah, I got asked. I just played because right. This guy from out of town, he asked me like weeks in advance, set it up,
right? But that's what I'm saying. Like, people who you want to play with ask you to play constantly, and so you end up playing like, you know, a ton, whereas like people know not even to ask me to play golf because I'm just like, I don't have 6 hours, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I used to be on Team Get Adam on the I'm playing golf, but that's I realized we should get you playing golf down the road.
Yeah, it's bad for the investment. Is
bad for business that Adam playing golf. I'll continue to play golf. Adam will be doing. I mean, you are just grinding. Like, just the guy we play basketball today, and he's got to rush home. It's just podcast, yeah. call. Spaces, yeah. Today. I mean, Adam even
that was a waste. Waste spaces. I don't like spaces. Yeah,
it's a waste. You don't need the followers. You're boosting everyone else's follower count.
Yeah, I don't even think about it like that. But like, I just don't find it to be compelling content. Like, we didn't go in with any plan. There's no like, not that we go into a plan with this show either. But yeah, spaces I found to be a waste. But yeah, I think honestly, like I know Peter knows this about himself. Like, it's hard to say no to people, and like sometimes the people who are closest to you in your life, it's like, oh, they'll be fine if I say no to them, which I, you know, is obviously not fair. But like, you know, if I tell Lauren, hey, I'm busy today, she like gets it because like she knows me. But some guy who really wants to meet me or something for business or whatever, or somebody I just want to like have fun with or whatever, it's hard to say no in those spots. Because
that's like, probably my biggest weakness. Ashley, yeah, puts up with it, and it's true. Like, the people closest to me get the shortest end of the stick, but I'm working on being more balanced. And yeah, golf season's good. You know, there's not skiing. Like, people don't come in, like, don't ask me to ski. I wish they asked me to ski. Then I'd be really sad.
Golf is definitely valuable. I understand why you do it. And like all the different things you can learn about people, I think is incredibly valuable. It just takes up so much time. It's like even to get to the point that me and Levitan could join you would take like years of effort.
No, that's where you guys are so right. It doesn't matter because you can just play fast.
Yeah,
but you do get, if like, so like quality time, that's a love language, right? There's no better quality time than golf. And like, yeah, I just had some good friends out that are, and it was truly like a business day yesterday on the golf course, and we walked the course, and like, it's 7 miles of walking, super healthy. We did have some drinks, so canceled that out, but so much quality time. You get so many great conversations. You really get to learn so much. And like, by the end of it, you feel like you're best friends regardless. Like, it's just, it's such a high quality.
When we went to meet with the ETR guys, we played dice at night. I thought that was super fun. We could talk, and we were gambling and stuff. How is that different?
I love dice. I'm just better at, yeah, you know, golf game. Although dice, there's a little bit of skill in dice.
There's definitely some skill.
Let me tell you what the dream is. Golf, then dice.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
last week I was, when Dink was out, me and Dink were playing tennis, and I was playing tennis with Mark, and these fucking degenerates are playing dice in the corner of the court, and Beaupre rolls up. It's like 8:30 in the morning. Beaupre rolls up. He just walks in. He says, oh, dice? This is going to be my second dice session of the day. By 8:30 in the morning, they're playing dice on the tennis court. I mean,
shout out to Beaupre. Shout out to our buddy Ty, too, yesterday on the golf course. He was playing dice on Telegram while we were golfing. Just legendary stuff.
Anyways, preseason starts tomorrow. I assume you guys will not be in the streets. There is some good action, though. And Cody and Glenn and Gary are grinding their cocks off just for one game. I think that there's going to be pretty good edge in this one game slate tomorrow, Thursday. But the full game slates is where it takes so much work. And I think we can have a really, really much bigger edge. And so I'm excited about the preseason tomorrow. I assume you guys will not be in the streets, though, for preseason DFS tomorrow.
Last year, I was not in the streets. This year, we're freaking grinding.
Oh, what's Bitcoin must be really buried if Peter's playing the preseason slate tomorrow.
When some of your tokens are at zero, you have to play preseason DFS.
I guess you guys didn't hoodle.
I hope to play in all seriousness. I don't think I'll be grinding it. Like, in the past, I've played every slate. I don't think that'll happen, but part of the fun. And I think one of the real reasons I was so excited about getting involved in ETR last year, I literally did nothing. I just used ETR's content, projections, everything else. And like, I think there's a little bit of an edge. I think there definitely is an edge. And in preseason, I think there's definitely an edge too.
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing I talked about on the Spaces thing today, which I'm sure nobody listened to because Spaces is pretty fucking stupid. But
you're wrong. I had multiple texts saying how much they love the Spaces.
Oh my god. I think like I try to be real careful about when I talk about the games in DFS because it's way different what your role is. And 99% of the people that are following us and subscribing, you know, they're playing somewhere between, you know, $20 and $500 a week. And I still think if you game select right at those levels, there is a ton of money to be made, like a ton. It's when you have to start playing real big, like Brandon or Peter or Bales, where the games start to get way, way, way tougher. So I just try to be sure that like, we're not in the bubble when we talk about that. I hope I made that clear on the Spaces, but yeah.
In terms of a preseason action, like say everything below $100 or something, what percentage of people do you think are using ETR, and you know, how does that affect their edge?
Yeah, I mean, I think the people playing real volume are using ETR. I'm not sure how that spills into low stakes, but like obviously I know how many people subscribe to our package, and it's like, I mean, we're not really making money on the preseason package, let's put it that way. There's gonna be way more people than we have subscribed. So yeah, I don't know. I think it, you know, the part where it gets tough is like, why, one of the reasons I tell people not to play like the multi-entry double ups in DFS is because that gets like overwhelmingly weighted to people who are good and have ETR sub and are trying like single entry double up and stuff like that is typically going to be pretty good. So yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah. At what point do you think it's like, you know, your edge in preseason? Like, I haven't looked at preseason other than like a few years ago, we were playing racquetball. I think I like was taught, you knew preseason, and then either gave me advice or not a lineup. That's forbidden. You definitely didn't give me a lineup. And I won a bunch of money. Like, at what point do you think it's useful up to like $1,000 or something, and you can't, like, you're not going to get 10K down or whatever.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, the action is pretty big. You can certainly 150 into the quote unquote lottos profitably on both sites, and so right there, I mean, you're going to make a pretty good expectation there. There's certainly head to head action to be had. You know, have battled Raven in the past, and you know, I think he's good, and I think we have a small edge, maybe not enough to beat the rake, but yeah, maybe there'll be some other people in head to head this year. I don't know, it's hard to say, but yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure, be careful as you move up in stakes in preseason to make sure that you get some people at least who aren't trying. Thanks to everybody who's in the chat. UC Sandman says don't cut Laden. Lou Derman, we do not have an LLC for Three Donkeys, unfortunately.
That's not true. I own that.
I think you're on mute, Peter.
ThreeDonkeys.eth.
ThreeDonkeys.eth. Oh my god.
How are you gonna bring that up live? I don't own that yet.
Spaces is like a crypto bro thing, right?
Yeah. The thing about Spaces that was great that I actually genuinely did enjoy, smoke a little weed, do work, and like mute yourself for a long time. But today we were just, it was action packed. BA really wanted to chat tennis bets.
Well, yeah, but you can't like chill and mute because you're hosting it, right? You're talking about ones that you aren't hosting, you mean?
Yeah, that's the dream.
Yeah, not hosting. Yeah.
Not hosting is the dream. You can record them and turn them into podcasts, though. Would you like that if we had a setup?
I'm saying, but why isn't it just a podcast? But yeah, of course I'd rather record it. Like if my time is going to be used, I don't want it to be used for like 150 people. I'd rather record as a podcast so everybody can listen.
Yeah. Right? No, that would have been the move, but yeah, we're unorganized.
Right.
It was mostly a gauge of, and I'm feeling like I might want to book some more action with you, Levitan, on this Brandon Adams
test. I don't want more action. I think I'm a huge dog.
Oh, well, I think I might have a Huckleberry somewhere else too. Okay. I'll sell you $100 too. I'm working that right now.
All right. I'm rich. Have you guys, the question I want to ask about NFL DFS. So I assume you guys don't play much season long. I'm curious, Bales, we can start with you. Do you think that do you find yourself wanting or needing to follow NFL news, signings, preseason usage, injuries, whatever, ahead of week one for DFS? Or do you think it's better to just for you to just show up clean of week one and try to figure it out then?
I think that it's like you need to have some baseline knowledge of what's going on and, you know, just not paying attention at all. Like, I roughly know, I have nowhere near the knowledge that I used to. Like, I probably, let me think, maybe 2012 to 2015, 16 or something. Like, I honestly thought I knew draft prospects better than like anyone in the world. Like, I knew every single thing about every player coming out. That was all I did all day long was study this stuff. And in hindsight, like I knew all these like very, very granular things, but it wouldn't have helped me really gamble. But you can't just like not, you know, like it, you can't completely ignore everything coming into the season and just like figure it out week one. But I definitely think that there's like a curse of knowledge type of thing where when I really knew a lot, when I really knew, like, you know, that, for example, pressure rate is more indicative of future success for pass rushers than their sack rate in college or something, or their arm length matters a lot or whatever, or quarterback hand size matters a lot, especially when they're really short and people are underrating them, like Russell Wilson. When you know these things, it can be like too much. Like, then you start to look for these very specific things that like still have a very low chance of working out relative to like, oh, this guy's just like in a really good spot and he's going to get 25 carries or something. So it would hurt me. So I think that you need to have some baseline knowledge going into the season, but like being completely on top of everything, like you guys are, I don't think that for me that would help that much. And I think it could actually hurt.
My take is that talent is like not irrelevant, but people overrate it so much for DFS that like what you were talking about, understanding how good every prospect is, to me doesn't matter. Like, I don't spend any time on that at all. I spend like all my time trying to figure out exactly how these guys are going to be used, where they'll be on the field, in what situations are they going to play in, how secure is their role. And to me, like, that's where the edge is. And so I spend all my time on that. And I couldn't imagine going to the season without like knowing exactly, having some guess or projection on exactly how every single player is going to be used. So, you know, and also I just like kind of like grinding this stuff. Like, you know, Evan said that Mike Evans was put on earth to score touchdowns. Like, I feel like I was put on earth to like scour the internet for football usage news. So yeah, it's a pathetic existence, but it's one that I enjoy.
It's great.
No, we love you for that.
Thanks for doing all the hard work, Adam. I'm grinding my cock on fucking Underdog and these best balls. And I do think that you're mostly right, Adam, but you know, I think where we've had a divergence where I think you're broadly right, but I think in the perfect world you've done both is you'd have role, but then also understanding talent to a degree as well. I mean, that's where, and you can get the measurables and stuff, but like when I had my most success was when I was playing college football and NFL DFS, and I feel like I really knew all these players. And like, there's certain guys that are just uber talented. Like Devontae Smith is like a perfect example. Like, he's not going to like scream off the page in a lot of ways, but he's just super talented. And you know, we'll see what happens with Hurts this year. And I'm not even advocating for him, like where he's positioned, but like, that's just a guy who's like more talented than like the raw number would say. And then of course, like to me, where I think we've had the biggest disagreement is like, I like to find like these outliers that are just like the fastest guys in the field or like have some anomaly, like the Tyreek Hills or whatever. But
yeah. I mean, go ahead,
Val. I was wrong. I picked Tavon Austin and I, you know, I've been wrong on some of these guys too. It's just, it's hard.
I think the talent matters maybe a little bit more than you think, Levitan, at certain positions. I think it matters at receiver more than it does at running back. Of course, it matters at quarterback. It's hard to assess, but there's different ways. But I think that, like, all of the things that go into projecting a player for a week, of course, that matters more than anything. Like, every single thing that goes into that, their talent, their workload, the opponent, all these different factors – but to me, it's not like, can I actually do this like that well. It's how easy is it to outsource that? And it's becoming very easy to outsource it. Like, why do I need to do it when you're doing it?
Right.
And so if you're doing it, I can just use what you have. Like, 100%. And there's lots of people doing that, and you aggregate those, and then you have like, you're pretty close to what like the consensus is of what this player is going to do. And then you can focus on things that matter for you, which for me in the past has been like game selection, game theory, lineup construction, correlations, things like that, that I think are have long-term benefit. Whereas like, you know, how many, what sort of situation is AJ Brown in, and it, does he have like a 28% market share of catches, whatever. You can just outsource that. It's like really intricate stuff, and I don't want to get involved with like trying to compete with people on that.
Right, exactly. And like, that's essentially like what people pay us for. Like, there's a ton of information out there. There's a ton of news. There's a ton of stats, but we take what we actually think is important, and we're continuously updating it. And we think, you know, we actually know what's important. We find it. And that's what people pay us for, essentially what Bales is saying, to give them like the most accurate baseline expectation on a player. And then they can go from there with some of the context stuff that we use for how to actually win. So yeah, the only thing I'd push back on the talent stuff is like, you can see talent in average yards of separation for a receiver, in targets per route run. Like, are they earning targets, you know, and measurables. And so like, I don't think you actually have to like sit there and like grind the tape and be like, look at this guy's hip swivel. Like, that to me, that's like so ridiculous.
Oh, the real talent evaluators are the teams themselves giving them opportunities. So right. That kind of, you know, emphasizes your point.
Exactly. All right. I wanted to spend some time here about health. I got to tell a story about this life insurance incident that I had, and kind of stuff stemming from that. So maybe like a month ago, we wanted to take out insurance on me. I already have personal life insurance. This was insurance for the company. So guy comes out here, takes my blood. Like, a week goes by. They send me the results, and everything looks normal except for this one test, which was like off the charts. Like, literally, like there's a chart, and then like my reading on this test was so far off, it was like outrageous. And so I looked up what the test was, and basically, if you have a high number on this test, you have congestive. It's a sign, a marker of congestive heart failure, which basically means like your heart eventually will start pumping blood. The higher your number is, the more likely like you are to die soon, because your heart just stops pumping blood. So basically, from what this number said, if it was right, I would have been dead in 5 years. My heart would have just like stopped. So this life insurance company comes back to me with this test. They call me, they say, you're uninsurable. You know, you have this congestive heart failure. We suggest you see your doctor. So like, I tell my wife, she's fucking crying. And, you know, nobody can live. My parents weren't concerned at all. They were like, you'll be fine. But everybody else was like dying. And honestly, like, I thought there was a chance the test was wrong, but I was like, obviously worried too. And I was scared I couldn't get an appointment with my doctor for a few days. And so, yeah, it was like a long week or two of like not knowing if the test was right or not, if like I was going to die or whatever. I get to my actual doctor, and she's like, her first reaction was like, these fucking life insurance companies, you know, they have no idea what they're doing. They're looking for reasons not to write insurance. They're conducting these tests in people's houses. They're not using the right lab work. And she was like, can you exercise? I was like, yeah, I mean, I exercise almost every day. And she was like, okay, then there's no way you have congestive heart failure. Like, people have congestive heart failure, like literally can't walk up the stairs without running out of breath. So she was like, but if you want, we'll rerun the test and we'll send you for an echocardiogram. And I was like, yeah, sure. And she was like, you know, she warned me like insurance probably won't cover this. I was like, fine, you know, I'll pay. So long story short, I take all these new tests and I'm completely fine. Like, totally clean bill of health. The test was wrong. That test that was off the charts was like right in normal range. I'm perfectly fine. It ended up costing me like easily four figures to do all these tests and everything. Next, my question was like, I mean, why are we not doing this test more often? And my doctor was just like, money, you know, like, and I was just like, man, just like charge me, you know? So I guess my point was like, everybody should be getting this test. And she was like, well, it has such a low probability of it coming back bad. I'm like, yeah, but what's the downside of like taking all these tests? So I was curious how you guys think about that, because I also, after all this, I wanted to do this pre-nuvo thing, which is essentially like some company that scans your entire body. You do like a 2-hour MRI, it checks you for cancer, tumors, like precursors for everything. And all these doctors that I talked to were like, no, it's a waste. Don't do that. It's just going to get you worried. I just don't see the downside in like doing all this screening. And I feel like if I'm going to spend money on anything, it should be on health. Like there's zero reason for me to wake up one day and be like, oh, you have stage 4 cancer. Like, why not just screen for this every year? I don't care how much it costs, because once I have stage 4 cancer, like it's GG, you know, it's over and I can't enjoy anything that I've worked for. So I don't know, man. I'm just like somewhat tilted by the whole health process. That thing was obviously super tilting, but I don't know, Bales, how do you think about screening and health and all that stuff? Is it worth going and paying money for these tests and all that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when you told me about that you thought you had congestive heart failure, and I was really worked up. I called Peter and just said, you know, dude, this is really, really bad because we're going to have to find a new host.
I thought you were going to say this is really, really bad because our investment is dust.
Oh, that's the key.
Nah. Yeah, in terms of the health is really like you really don't think about it until it's gone. It's kind of like your freedom or something. And it's really hard to prioritize it until it's too late. And so in general, I'm on board. I don't know too much about the specific test that you're looking at. But in general, I think it's right to prioritize health when it doesn't seem like it's an issue. Unfortunately, like most people that can invest in their health, I think are people that have like poor people. It's a very unfair, like they can't buy like getting fresh fruit and vegetables and things is more expensive than buying things that are just like shitty for you. And like getting one of these scans, of course, like you're not going to have someone that makes no money being able to go do this. And so it's a really like unfair thing, I think, where the people that can really track their health are the people that are fortunate enough to be in a position to do it. Peter and I invested in a company called Fitnessity like 2 or 3 years ago that is doing a really amazing job that does DEX scans, which I want all of us to do. We should book some bet around the DEX scan or something, a variety of blood work and things. I don't know what the company that you said exactly what they do. I think they do like full body scans.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that what the doctors say, one thing I learned is like doctors are not statisticians. They're way more knowledgeable about medicine than us, but they're not necessarily like really great with stats or like probability and things. And yeah, 95% of the time or 98% of the time, it's a waste. But 3% of the time,
it saves your life.
Yeah. So, for the minimal cost, if you have some money and there's some minimal cost and you can afford to get that done, even if it's just for like peace of mind, then I think that's probably worth it.
Yeah. I just don't see the downside. And this pre novo thing. And by the way, one more comment on doctors, they're so reactive, not preventative. And in other words, like you go to the doctor, you say like something hurts and they give you something to fix it. I really want someone who's like, you know, you should go get a scan just to check to see if like you have markers for some type of like prostate cancer. I mean, who knows, you know? And like, I don't know. I know they do that stuff and like you have to get a colonoscopy, which I'm dreading, which I can't believe that in the year 2022, the only way to get a colonoscopy is to stick something up your asshole still. Like that seems ridiculous to me, but anyways, I'm gonna have to do it soon. And so, yeah, like all that stuff seems like a no brainer. I don't know, Peter, any comments on all this stuff?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's something I've been super focused on and thought a lot about. I'm in like the worst shape of my life now after gallivanting for a year, but yeah, Bales and I made that investment. the gym. I blocked off time for, I haven't been as diligent, but it's something I want to get into for this season, is really just like being a stickler to investing in my health in the mornings. And yeah, I love the business side, and I agree that doctors are reactive, and I have this concept for a business. Someone can try to steal it if they want, but Longevity Lab is something I want to basically focus on. And I think wellness and people tracking their bodies and investing in their health is going to become more and more prominent as we learn more about the bodies and we have these devices. I mean, our gym crew is all tracking their Whoop stats, and Ashley just got me an Oura Ring. So yeah, it's something I'm super focused on. I want to be more diligent. I actually do the working out part and like being active part. Well, it's the drinking and the diet that's killing me, but yeah, I want to focus on it. And like, yeah, I have a sauna in the house. I did all this longevity stuff. I listened to, you know, the podcast for like Peter Attia, and the Huberman podcast have really exploded. Even on the All In podcast, they talk about a lot of this stuff. So yeah. Once people have money, that's the other thing too. Like I remember last year when things were going so well, all I was thinking about was this stuff. It's like, that's the hard part of you. You know, if you don't have, you know, security, or you're thinking about your next meal or whatever else, like we were talking about, like that's your main focus and you're not thinking about your health. But
100%. 100%.
Once you unlock financial freedom, then like the next step is like safety and your health and everything else. So,
I mean, that's one of the things that I was thinking about, like while I thought I was dying, like of congestive heart failure, it was like going through my mind, like, great, like I have some money now, you know, that's great, but I'm going to be dead. Like what was even the point? You know what I mean? And like that's like, it should be a good wake up call, I think, for everybody. And it's certainly like first world thing to think about, but yeah, man, like there's, if you're not healthy, you can't not only forget about dying, like even if you can't enjoy life, you know, you have some type of disease where you can't do shit, like it's just, there's no point to even have money. So like, what's even the point? So
yeah,
so
yeah, we're not breaking anything new here. And the classic cliche line is your health is your wealth. But yeah, it is true. I mean, for me, the big wake-up call was my Achilles injury. I just remember how like thankful I was to like go out and be able to do it. And like, I remember telling Steve Bass, like, he's like, how much did you pay not to have your Achilles thing? And like, you know, I was doing well at the time, but like not like crazy well. And I was like, oh, I'd pay $1 million right now not to have my Achilles be ruptured. He's like, oh, that's crazy. And I like, I would definitely, I wish I could have done that somehow, but
yeah.
Yeah. One thing that, I've thought about is, it is really difficult to appreciate your health unless you're unhealthy, which like, you know, when you don't have your health, you don't like, you can't enjoy life like you once could. You really just like, that's all you want. You would like pay almost anything for that. But when you do have your health, it's so easy to forget. And like, what are the ways that you can come to appreciate, hey, I'm healthy today, whatever. One is meditating, whatever. But one thing that I've done that's like kind of, I don't know, sadistic or something is like, think about like the worst things in the world that could happen to you and your relatives and your friends. And like, seriously, like every day, like think like, oh, I could be completely, you know, I could be paraplegic and my parents both die in a fire. And like, this sounds awful, but these things could happen to you. Your life could be so much worse. And if you like start every day thinking about the worst possible thing that could ever happen to you, you really, and like put yourself mentally in that situation, like this could be your life. You know, so many bad things could happen to you. And then you will come to, hey, I'm free today to do what I want. I'm relatively healthy. Maybe I have problems, but they're not huge problems. And, you know, I think that's a good way to go about, it's like reverse meditation.
Yeah. And just being grateful, you know, it's part of being grateful, but I'm about more actionable stuff. So this Pre-Novu company, the only reason I heard of it, cause they talked about it on the All In podcast. I went and I looked at their site. They're not in Colorado. They're in a few other places, but basically what you go there, you get a full body scan and it tells you like, do you have tumors? Do you have cancer, whatever. We should do a bet where we all do the Pre-Novu scan. And if someone had like, you know, you get cancer bonuses or like tumor bonuses and stuff like that. If you have something the other people pay.
I have two things along those lines. That's crazy. You guys in Nashville said, Pete, no more inspirational quotes on Twitter. That was probably good advice. But there's a good quote on this. I know I gave a cliche thing, but this is totally true. Hits home what we're saying. Healthy person has 1,000 wishes. sick personally as one.
Yeah.
So it's so true. Just like, you know, if your back's hurting or when I had the Achilles, you're only thinking about one thing. When you wake up healthy, you're thinking about the whole world. And yeah, so Ben Lamb was talking about, you know, if we're fortunate enough to have another kid down the road, he's like, oh, if you have another kid down the road, you know, I'll give you insurance. If you have another girl, I'll pay you $10,000. But if you have a boy, you have to pay me $10,000. Big free. It's a win-win. And I was like, yeah, I'd be happy with two girls, but that is funny. And I agree. We should have some sort of thing in there. Although, you know, if you're told you have 6 months to live and you get $20,000, it's not going to be much.
I like the idea though.
I'm good on the idea too.
I could have a lot of tumors. So, I mean, I could get real rich on this deal.
God. Okay. One more topic before we get to Laden. So there was a tweet. So after the World Series of poker, the guy who won, by the way, was a Luna bro. I don't know if you followed this story, Peter, but the guy won was a poker pro who was heavily invested in Luna, said, you know, he lost like a million or two in the Luna crash and kind of had to like go back down in stakes. And you know, obviously like he had enough money to play the main event and he ended up with 56% of himself, not because he was selling, but because he was swapping. And that's like super common in poker among really good players is to swap with other really good players just to, reduce the variance. It's not like this dude couldn't afford 10K, but he did lose a million or two or something. He said in Luna, whatever, he wins the main event for 10 million. He had 56% of himself, yada, yada, yada. But anyways, the question came up, you win the World Series of Poker main event for 10 million. You have 56% of yourself. How much do you tip? 2.025% of the prize pool was withheld for the staff. That's $1.74 million. And then it was also raked at $4 million. So do you tip on top of that? The rake was $4 million and the withheld for the staff automatic tip was 2.025%, $1.75 million. I guess we can start with you, Peter. Did you know he was a Luna bro? And what do you think about all this tipping stuff?
I did know he was a Luna bro. I heard all about it. I'm an absolute massive tipping fish. Which maybe not the right term, but I worked in restaurants. It was my first job as a beer vendor for 8 years, and just in general, love to tip. You know, when things are going well, love to do the occasional give $100 to whatever, you know, like the fun coupons, as Phil Mickelson said, who's not getting the same exposures with all the live stuff going on. But it's nice to like actually see, you know, people get excited and to do cool stuff. I especially love to do it, like going to buy a beer, like the beer vendors and whatever else. That's really fun. And always try to tip really well, which, you know, you don't see those people again very often and whatever else, but to me, it's just like part of my roots. And I think everyone should have to work a service job at some point. And I don't try to tip everyone like super, super well, but if someone's doing a good job, I think it's important. And the poker spot, I actually have like, you know, I've never won a big tournament or anything like that. I won some small blackout tournaments and tip like 5%, 10%, something like that. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, the main event, I mean, I don't know what standard is and like, I don't know. That's a really tough spot. I mean, I certainly would tip something. I just don't know. I would have to ask a lot of questions and try to like get insights from other people.
Yeah. The poker thing sucks because, you know, it's not like you said, it's selfish, but it's gratifying to like hand money to actual someone, you know, and see their reaction and see them be thankful or appreciative or whatever. You know, at the poker tournament, like, you know, after I was lucky enough to win a couple of tournaments, I would just like, they were like, would you like to leave a tip for the dealers? And I say, sure. And I leave a bunch of cash in like a bowl basically. And that's it. You know, I don't see anyone or see anything or anything like that. And so the World Series of Poker thing was also complicated by they withhold for the staff. Again, 2.025%.
What's a standard tip for a win?
Yeah, I think somewhere between 3% and 5% is standard. 10% is a lot. If you really tip 10%, I mean, that's a lot. And also keep in mind, like, this guy's not paying taxes because he was a London citizen, the guy who won. But, you know, here in the United States, if you win a poker tournament, you will be getting a W-2G for your winnings. And so, yeah,
and can you track the tip? Could you like write a check or something like that? I mean, that's the other part.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
I'm pretty sure he still needs to pay taxes.
The London citizens of England, if they win gambling money outside of England, do not have to pay. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah, there's like a whole article. And wow. Same with Monaco. That's why all those guys live there.
And Canada has rules. I mean, we're huge fish. I mean, imagine being professional gamblers and living in the U.S. I mean, it's just such a fish move. But the U.S. is great.
That's where we are. This is related to, so I was going to ask you guys, I have a few different tipping questions here to get your guys' take. But when you have like a really big bill at a restaurant, say it's like $800 or $1,000 and it was really good service versus a $50 bill, I feel like the percentage, it's unreasonable to tip the same percentage.
Yeah.
You don't need to tip someone $300 because on a, you know, on a $50 bill, you would tip them 15.
Right.
Right. On 300 on a thousand. And that's sort of like, if you win the World Series of Poker, tipping 10% is insane. That's nuts. Like, right. I think you should give them, if you give them 10K or something, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah. There has to be some, you have to adjust somewhat for the job that they're doing.
Honestly, I think about that all the time. Like, if I go to IHOP, these people are working so hard at IHOP. They're the ones that are like setting the table, clearing the table, bringing all the food. At these fancy restaurants, you know, they have all these people that are doing all those jobs for them. And like the person with a $30 bill at IHOP, it might be working harder than the person with an $800 bill at some fancy restaurant, you know? And so yeah, I totally agree with that.
It depends. At the fancy restaurants, sometimes they have like really specific knowledge. They can add to your meal and like, you know, they can tell you a lot about the, you know, where your, you know, beef came from or like all these different things. And so they are more knowledgeable and like in some ways they deserve more than just like someone who doesn't care. But yeah, it costs a lot more and I think tipping 35% or something on a $1,000 bill is, that's a lot of money for someone to make.
Oh yeah, it's for sure. And by the way, in Europe, we went to some very nice restaurants when we were in France. They don't even like leave a space for tip. Like, it's not even a question, you know. There's like, yeah, their waiters there just get paid like actual wages, and they're like real wages. They actually get paid. So yeah.
That was one of my other questions, and I want to hear what you had to say, Peter. But just how you go about tipping in other countries where it's not customary?
Yeah, it's like awkward, you know. Like I want to tip people when I'm traveling, but they like it makes it awkward. It makes you just seem like a dumb American. I feel like to do that because nobody else is doing it.
Yeah, the other thing I'm tipping with meals specifically is alcohol. So like, let's say you ordered like a $500 bottle of wine or something. Like, a lot of people don't tip on alcohol or tip less. But it's tough. I mean, I've always erred on the side of just like
taking
care of, but like, and I know you guys do too, but I agree, Bales. I'm not, you know, I'm way more likely to do a crazy tip on like a $100 meal than like a $1,000 meal.
Right.
Yeah. I always tip, I think, fairly well. But yeah. Yeah, like what range do you guys tip? Like how much do you actually reward good service? So do you have like, I'm always tipping 15%, 20%, 25%, and then if it's amazing, I'm going to tip this, or like if it's really bad, I'm going to tip 10%, you know, because that's the way that it actually should be. And that's why I think that tipping, the even though tipping has its flaws, I think it's a much better system than certainly in Europe, where you could just sit around for 3 hours with people smoking and they're not like, they're not going to come around. They don't give a shit. Right. In the US, like, they're generally incentivized to do a good job. Right. Yeah. And that is because of the tips.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And like, I actually brought up the whole pre-tipping thing because I was like, man, you know, like, these people don't know if I'm going to tip well or not. So I want to make sure they don't spit in my food. They give me the best service possible. So we should start pre-tipping them. But Bales's point is taken, that they should be, you know, incentivized because they don't know what's coming. But I feel like it would be, if I gave a waiter, 30% of what I expected the bill to be before we started, he would take care of me. Right. He'd do his best, I think. Right. Like, or maybe he already has the money.
Well, there's the money.
Right.
You're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a much better incentive structure. It is weird. And the thing that's hardest about the spots where I just feel the worst with tipping is like when you don't know if you're supposed to tip the person or not. Like, that's the worst. Like, you're in Vegas or whatever else, and it's like, oh, you have to tip every single person. And like, I don't, there's certain spots where it's like, doesn't feel great.
Yeah. Like, what do you guys do like with a, you know, like, valet or a bellman when you don't have cash on you? Yeah. You know, you can't tip them. Like, what are you gonna do?
You gotta come with cash. Anytime I think I'm in a tipping situation, I come with cash strapped, baby.
Yeah, a lot of times I just don't have cash, and then yeah. I'm like, you know, I'm like, all right, I'll get you later. Yeah. And I do if I see them.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we've gone long enough here. By the way, I don't know what that guy ended up tipping the World Series guy, but yeah, maybe we'll try to find out. If anybody knows out there, I'd be curious if he tipped on top of that 2%. All right. Despite corporate's pleas, we are going to do a round or two of Laden here tonight. Remember, Laden is not about getting the question right. It's about getting as close as humanly possible to what the person will say. Had some hijinks last week. If anybody has a question, ready to roll, I'm ready.
I'll ask one for Levitan.
Also, we really need to get through. Who's accounting for this? No one.
I think Scott actually said that he would, but Scott, of course, is our unpaid intern, so we can't exactly crack the whip.
Would ETR be willing to give Scott $30 per episode if he can retroactively track this and include this? Actually, I'll give Scott $30 per episode.
Whoever's winning should give Scott $30.
Yeah, Scott can take rake out of the
Yeah, we're playing a no big game. There's the rake right there. Perfect.
Yeah, just rake us.
All right, go ahead, Bounce. Right.
I think Scott's making about $12 in that scenario, but okay. Levitan, how many people in the world think that dogs lay eggs?
Currently alive?
Mm-hmm.
We really need some music right here, huh?
All right. I have an answer.
I said 2.
Oh, damn. I said 7.5 million.
I said 200 million. Do you know how many like flat earthers there are and shit like that? Like
200 million people think dogs lay eggs?
Yeah.
Dude, 2 is low.
I went low on purpose because I thought Adam would say low. I actually thought the number was a little higher. I thought it would maybe like thousands, but 200 million?
There's also so many kids on Earth that have no idea. There's 7.8 billion people on Earth. You don't think 200 million? Yeah. I mean,
lots of people think dogs lay eggs. I had to look it up myself.
Wow.
All right. I got one.
I'm on a heater right now.
I'll stick with the theme of tonight's show. I'll ask Bales. How many people in the United States currently have stage 3 or worse cancer and have no idea? How many people currently in the United States currently have stage 3 or worse cancer and have no idea?
Sticking with the theme of tonight's show. All right.
I have an answer.
I have no idea. Right? Okay. I said 150,000.
I said 690,000.
87,500.
Oh, that is so low. Do you know how many people get diagnosed with cancer each year? I mean,
stage three. Those people are either know it or are dead.
Again, stage three is
pretty aggressive.
Yeah, God, I'm not up on
my going with the theme of tonight's show, my dad got diagnosed with colon cancer like 5 years ago, and luckily he recovered. But I mean, it was the scariest thing of my life. It was so bad, and it was really, really aggressive, just out of nowhere. And yeah, it was stage three.
How did they find it? With the colonoscopy?
Yeah, colonoscopy that his doctor made him go to that he didn't go to for years. So now I have to get a colonoscopy like much earlier because colon cancer is hereditary slightly.
Dude, I mean, we can do amazing things on this planet. Why do you need to stick something up your asshole in order to check for colon cancer? There has to be another way.
They don't think they've researched another way?
I mean, I just don't get it. How is this possible?
It's clearly the optimal way to do it, bud. They've been doing this for a long time.
So sick. All right. Peter needs to ask you? Bales.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who in the first round.
Well, we just need to answer one. Yeah, but yeah.
The only fair way to do this is to go three rounds, just so you know.
Yeah, I'm not doing three rounds. Peter, you're up.
Okay. I'll ask Bales. How many people while playing golf have witnessed ducks or geese having sex in the year 2022? If you've watched ducks having sex, that's some wild shit right there.
Yeah, I know. I
know. How many people in the United States this year?
This year. Have you seen multiple? Like, let's say I've seen ducks or geese having sex 20 times. I'm still only one person.
Right.
On the golf course.
Do they need to know that that's what they're seeing?
Yeah, they need to know. I don't think it changes the number that much.
It changes my number quite a bit. Oh my God. All right, I have an answer.
I have an answer.
All right, I have an answer.
I said 55,000.
I went way lower, 6,900.
I said 250.
Yes, ship it.
Damn it, I almost went really low and then I went higher for Bales.
I mean, have you seen them having sex?
Oh, yeah. Hence why I asked the question.
What does it look like?
The ducks have the weirdest dicks ever.
Why?
They're like little, like, they're like, look it up. Like,
all right.
Like circular. It's wild.
Well, everyone's, I just put duck penis into Google image and I'm,
Oh yeah, it's a spirally.
Yeah. It's spirally, yeah.
All right, that's enough of that.
it looks like a corkscrew.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the word I was looking for, and I couldn't find it in my mind.
I couldn't figure it out.
Right. Couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, UC Sandman knows. See, this guy says they're corkscrew, so they can't rape the females. Pretty fucked up, he says. I don't know how that stops the rape, but okay.
Yeah, it's bad.
All right, I got one for Peter.
Okay.
How many clothing hangers are there in the U.S. right now?
Including, obviously, not just households, including stores, everything else.
Yeah.
And yeah. Okay, wow.
You're asking Peter that, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I have an answer.
I have an answer.
I have an answer.
All right. I said 750 million.
3.5 billion.
I said 600 billion.
600 billion hangers?
Dude, Ashley and I must have like 400 in our house. Dude,
I knew you'd go high.
You can't use you as a fucking baseline.
Dude, everyone, how many hangers do you have in your house?
Dude, I went 10 hangers per person, but some people have no hangers.
10 hangers per person is way higher than that.
Dude, yeah, if you're fucking rich,
Peter. Think about how many poor people there are with no hanger, and there's a ton of kids with no hangers.
I don't know, bud.
I think
you're going into a dry cleaner. There's a fucking zillion hangers in those places.
Yeah,
you go into like a Target, stores, a Walmart, Costco. Yeah. There's fucking tens of thousands of hangers in these places. I stand by my answer.
No, it's your answer is way too high.
600 billion.
That's absurd. That's like,
he multiplied his closet by the number of people in the United States.
That's not what I did. I went through the stores. I mean, it's a huge number.
Dude, there is a ton of people.
Isn't that like 1,000 hangers per person, Peter? Or 2,000? Maybe 1,700.
I'm reading an article right here about this.
That's 1,700 hangers per person, I think.
Dude. There are so many people in the United States that don't own a single hanger. Like, way more than you think.
You guys are out of your mind.
Peter, you...
I didn't use a hanger when I was in college. Like, we didn't... Or even after. I didn't, like, care enough to...
No, I never used hangers.
Yeah.
That was a great question.
300. Okay, here's just an answer. Every year, just a specific type of hanger, there's 8 to 10 billion sold a year. You guys are way off on this. Dude, go into these stores. There's
600 billion. What do you think the average lifespan of a hanger is?
Not long. That's what I'm saying. There's tons of them. They're everywhere.
Exactly, but they're
churning out.
The churn on
that's there. Just like a specific type of plastic one. Then there's the metal hanger. These dry cleaners go through a zillion hangers a year. I mean, it's off the charts.
I think it's clearly Levitan's wrong, but your answer I think is really high.
I went a little higher after thinking about all the stores.
I can't believe that people click off during this part of the show. Honestly, this is riveting.
I mean, this hanger question is very compelling.
Okay. Who's asked two questions so far? Bales, you asked two questions?
Yeah, you and I need to ask two questions.
Me and Peter need to ask one more question each. Okay, go ahead, Peter, if you have one.
Okay.
I have one if you're not ready.
No, I do. I have an answer that's very specific. I'll ask it to you, Adam. You'll have a good idea. How much money will be locked up for the NFL season and best ball contests? So don't include the playoffs, but from week one on.
Here we go with you guys angling me again. Jesus.
You mean locked up total in best ball?
How many dollars are going to be bet total across every single site in best ball for the regular season?
Don't we already know the answer to that?
How would we know?
Because all the tournaments are up. I mean, there's not much cash action.
There's cash action.
I was going to ask it. Is it unethical for me to go on DraftKings and look? I can't do that.
No, go ahead.
I can't do that.
I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to. I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay, I won't do it then.
There's a $10 million underdog.
I know that. Yeah, I know there's a $10 million underdog.
Yeah.
Okay. How much is locked up?
Yeah, I'm not looking at any sites. I actually don't know that well.
All right, I have an answer.
I
do think it's unethical, actually, for me to go do that because the spirit of it, like, I never look up answers before. Like, we shouldn't be Googling things.
It shouldn't matter if you look stuff up because who knows what the person is going to say.
I know, but I think that gives some reference
point. If you're answering the question, it's worse, but yeah.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't know. Look up how many stars are in the galaxy.
All right. I have an answer.
I said 30 million.
I said 45 million.
I said 22 million. I think some of those like smaller ones like are 500K or 300K. It's like only Underdog has and DraftKings have multiple $1 million ones, right?
Yeah.
I know Drafters has a $1 million one, but like beyond that, I don't think they have much. All right. Last question of the night. Do we know who is left to answer? Probably Bales has to answer one more.
I answered two.
Okay. All right. I'll ask Bales. I'll give Bales a taste of his own medicine. How many people in the United States this year have farted and then said, oops, it wasn't me? How many people in the United States this year?
Oops, it wasn't me.
Have farted and then said, oops, it wasn't me.
Within how long of the fart?
Any fart.
Within 20 seconds of the fart.
Oops. It wasn't me. It's very specific. It wasn't me would be a pretty common one.
Yeah, it wasn't me. But oops.
Oops, really.
That's a really great question, though, Tim. I love that.
I stole Bales' whole shtick.
Oops.
Oops, it wasn't me.
If you have a history of saying oops, it wasn't me, say I said that like 5 or 10 times, that would only still be one, right?
Correct.
You're going to say that 10 times in 20 seconds?
No, he's saying if it does it multiple times in the same year, it only counts once. It's how many people have said it.
Oh, I see.
All right, I have an answer.
I have an answer.
I have an answer.
All right. I think Bales goes really low in these spots typically, so I said 6.
I said 60.
11.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I don't think anyone's fucking saying that. Oops, it wasn't me.
I agree.
Dude, it's like...
I almost said 0.
Yeah.
Oops.
You might as well say... You might as well be like, oh, I shit my pants. It wasn't me who farted. Like, what are you talking about?
By the way, one of your absurd questions from, I think it was 2 weeks ago, about how many people named Jose are born in China. Afterwards, somebody sent me a message and said that like China used to be owned. It was like a colony of like, I don't know. There used to be like some Spanish or Mexican situation going on in China a long time ago. And so you guys laughed at me, but I think my answer was probably right.
All right. Yeah, I knew you were factoring that in.
I knew it all along. All right. This has been fun. As always, appreciate you all being here for this very professional Three Donkeys. As you can tell, we're trying to get this on a regular schedule here once a week. I'm hopeful that it's going to be typically Wednesday or Thursday nights. Expect to check us out on here. But hopefully once the NFL season starts, we will be on a official schedule, same time, same place every week, so that we can really get it going with consistency. But appreciate you all, you guys, hanging out. If you ever have ideas of things you want us to talk about on the show, do not hesitate to reach out to me. You can DM me on Twitter, or reach out to Bales or Peter and let us know what topics you want us to hit on, if anything at all. For Bales, for Peter, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.